Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Planetary Powers. I am Hercules, and today I'm very proud to bring you a conversation about Valthor, Orthon, and the Venusians. Joining us will be Nick Curto of the Disclosure Network New York and also the Urantia Book Society New York. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. I've been very much looking forward to this program. This information really has me totally, curious. I've been investigating it for several years. The more you know, the deeper you go, the more you understand how secret, how top secret, high priority this whole subject was for so many years. It's astounding what was kept from the American public and, in fact, the entire world.
And now, in the spirit of disclosure, a lot of this information is coming out, although there's still many things that we don't know of. But I've always found the contactee era very interesting. Because although it seems like a modern phenomenon that happened after the bombs, when we started getting the visits from aliens from different planets and with the UFO sightings, this phenomenon is actually very ancient. So for me, it was a return of these planetary powers. And Valthor is a very fascinating alien, and his story is quite remarkable.
Oh, boy, that is the understatement. I only wish that I could have been there to see him or meet him. There's so much going on with that. Facts are still coming up. More is being revealed as we go. And in my humble estimation, I would say that you and I and the general public right now probably know maybe 25% tops of what really has gone on in the past. That is a very low number because there is so much that's been kept from us for so long on so many levels, and that it blows my mind that this huge secret, probably one of the biggest topics of ever on our planet, and most of it has been covered up silently. People have been known to disappear. People have been known to be killed. People have been sworn to secrecy. Most of those people kept their word and haven't said anything because they knew it might be a lights out for not only them, but for their families. And so this is huge, and it's very disturbing in some ways that such lengths were taken to cover up what was going on, which again is the biggest story you can imagine. And again, we're only beginning to get little bits and pieces of what really went on. So I'd like to start with the idea that when President Truman left his office as the President of the United States, and then Dwight D. Eisenhower became the next president, and a lot was about to pop all over the place when that happened. It's interesting to kind of speculate of why. Now, because Eisenhower had such amazing knowledge of military all through his life, military plans, military procedures, I think that he was the right guy, the right president to probably be picked to try to handle this top secret information. Although, according to some reports, the ETs didn't necessarily want it to be secret from the public. Well, that's an interesting right there, that it was really the administration that said, United States that said, no, this can't ever get out, ever. Now, there might have been some good reasons that they thought would be the reason to do this. Well, other people including me, think it was the wrong decision by far. But again, people will speculate all over the place on this. Don't forget that in 1947, the Majestic 12 top secret committee was formed under Truman. And that committee was investigating all the reports they could handle with ET contact and all the other factors around that. So that was going on. That was an ongoing thing when the President Eisenhower took over. And according to a lot of reports, and again, this was so top secret that these things are still leaking, that Edwards Air Force Base, which is in California, and also Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico, those two locations were locations where ETs were met by the president, once in Edwards Air Force Base in California and twice at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. So that's a total of three separate meetings. In 1954, there were three craft that were spotted over the Air Force Base, and a lot of people verified that. It was in a very secluded place that most people couldn't see that far of where these things were happening, but of course they were outside, so people did have little peeks at this, what's going on, and some reports say that the craft was seen floating. It looked like it was floating close to the ground, and three beings, they said, literally floated, not a staircase, but were floated from the craft down to the ground. And they say there was one tall and two short ETs. A limo picked them up and brought them to drove them to a nearby building right on the base there. And ETs were there, and they were communicating with Ike. For how long was that meeting? Most people say they believe it wasn't more than 45 minutes to an hour. So that's interesting. It was a fairly short meeting. One of the things that was apparently talked about was ET's insistence that we stop nuclear testing, that we were barking up the wrong tree. You already mentioned that, and that is very, very important, that nuclear testing, they were aware of. It was not going only to our atmosphere, but beyond that. And not only were they aware of it, but they said that that was affecting them and their lives, and that this was a no-no, and that we had to stop that.
That was part of the early contactee message that they brought us after encountering various ETs or aliens, as they were called back then. And the message is very consistent, and you're right. In the beginning, the aliens or the ETs were not shy about being photographed or having their vehicles photographed. And there's a lot of stories that have remained from that era of people being taken up and flown around a little bit. So it was very different than what happened later on with the Greys and the Reptilians and all the other types of ETs who came to our planet. And they had a spiritual message as well. And Balfour, he worked with Strangis to present his information to the public. And it occurred to me as you were speaking, the story you shared is a famous one, and there are photographs, and it was immortalized. That story was immortalized in Men in Black. One of the Men in Black movies had a little clip about that meeting. It's become very much a part of the UFO folklore. And you're right, they should reveal what happened, and a lot has been leaked over the years. Can you tell us what you know about the whole Balfour story, how he came with Victory One and his crew, Don and Jill? And it's really a fascinating story.
Oh, absolutely. I just want to do a couple more things about this time,
sure,
because I'm doing it in chronological order. And I think that the story of Balfour will more hold together. There's only a few more pieces of information here, but I think that when you see the whole picture of it, it's going to make a lot of sense. Again, Eisenhower went to Palm Springs for several days, and there were afternoons, I believe, when all of a sudden no one seemed to know where he was. Where was the President of the United States? And it finally came out, this has got to be a false statement, that he was had a chipped tooth and he was at a dentist. Well, that absolutely is not true. That was a lie. They were trying to cover their tracks, because what he was really doing was extraordinary. What he was doing was meeting ETs. And part of that conversation, according to some reports, not only said to stop nuclear testing for our own planet and our society and also the other brothers and sisters in other areas of the universe that it was affecting them, but it also said something else, which is quite interesting. They said that Earth eventually was on a path of destruction physically, and it had to do with the sun. And also the year that was flagged as a possibility was about 2060. 2060 seemed to be a year that they said a major destruction of our own planet was going to be taking place, and that was something we needed to know about. So that's really a very interesting also, besides the fact that to stop nuclear testing. So, okay, here we go. So let me see. I covered all that. I covered this. Just a couple more notes I have, and then we're going to get to write to Mr. Val Thor, Captain Thor. The three meetings again did happen, and Eisenhower was there. And, of course, Eisenhower, again, is the president that was met by Val Thor. So here we go again, that Eisenhower, not only the three times at the Air Force bases, but a few years later in Washington, D.C., and that's where we're talking about Val Thor. Now, the ETs were talking about experimentations of humans, that they wanted to do experimentations of humans, and they also didn't want that part to be revealed. And there's another report that said later on, approximately the year 2000, an ET met with someone named President Clinton. Now, I don't have any facts on that yet, but I'm just going to put that on the table.
Okay.
But again, huge Earth changes because of solar events to come in and around 260. So just keep that in mind, because that's sometimes not addressed. And it seems to me that's a very, very important point. Now, Val Thor came in a 300-foot in diameter spacecraft, and it landed in Alexandria, Virginia, and the date they're giving is March 16th, 1957 at 8 a.m. If you can imagine such a thing. Now, I'm sure you've been to Alexandria, Hercules, haven't you?
To Alexandria here in this country, no.
And it's, you can actually take a subway. I did that from Washington, D.C. The subway goes not too far from the Pentagon and eventually goes to Alexandria, which is an old, old city. Lots of history in Alexandria. And he landed there. And eventually he was escorted by a police vehicle with a lot of security, because he asked to be seen by the president, which, of course, again, here we go, it's Eisenhower. And that is quite interesting. And there's a lot of description here. For one thing, he was wearing a one-piece suit, and including boots. They later found out that when they weighed it, according to reports, he let them test it, and they said it was weighing about six ounces, which is nothing. They said that the material that Val Thor was wearing could not be ripped. Bullets would not go through it. It couldn't be set on fire. They did not know what the material was, and they said that when he put it on or took it off, so obviously somebody was witnessing this, there were no buttons or zippers or anything like that, but it simply, when it came together, it would kind of seamlessly stay together, and then you could not perceive where the two pieces of material came together. It was like one solid piece. How interesting is that?
Yes, fascinating.
And as far as fingerprints, Val Thor did not have fingerprints. And according to others who witnessed him very close up, he also did not have, get this, a navel. A navel. How interesting is that? Now, I mean, we can speculate as to what that means, and we can go down some real rabbit holes on that, but how interesting that is. Other things, I'm going to skip around a little bit to give you a big general picture, and then we can go into some detail. At one point in his stay, when he met the president, he again said that he was on a peace mission, and he was sent by his planet, and that they live underground in Venus. Venus was the planet that he talked about, and that he said the society lives underneath, a ways underneath the planet. And that's where they are. And a committee voted him to come to our planet and talk to our president about what they wanted and what they were willing to give us. Now, what were they willing to give us? Incredible technologies of medicine, that we would have advanced medicine, that we would be able to live a lot longer because of some of these things that they were going to give us. They were going to give us new kinds of fuel. Well, that is huge. In fact, that's one of the reasons that, as I think you know, the answer after 3 years of him talking to everyone that they set him to talk to about the fact that we had to give up nuclear and so forth, and the final answer after 3 years was an emphatic no. In other words, the vote came out that, no, we weren't about to make any deals with Valiant Thor. And again, he came in, according to all the reports, on a mission of love and peace and protection. Well, wow. I mean, they're not if they wanted to invade us, they could have done that like 4,000 years ago or more. They were coming on a mission of peace. Now, that's huge, huge. And a lot of people don't understand that was the motivation at the time.
That's very, very a lot of what they said is peace and universal brotherhood and evolution. The contactee literature is consistent in the message that it keeps giving over and over and over again.
Other things that I find amazing is that when asked if they knew about the what we call the Universal Father, God, the answer was yes, yes. And a Dr. Strange, a person who had many different occupations during his life, he was a religious person. He also was a military person. If I can find it, I have a lot of the things that he was doing during his life. And he was giving a lecture, and after the lecture, someone from the Pentagon, a woman, came up to him and asked to speak to him and invited Dr. Strange to meet Val Thor. And so, of course, he accepted that, and they did meet. They said that the reported meeting was extremely friendly, very, very friendly indeed, and Val Thor, upon meeting him, also told him a few things about his family that Dr. Strange never, ever knew, had never heard of some of this family history from anybody, and Val Thor was telling him things about his family. One of the things he mentioned to Strange's utter astonishment is that before he was born, Strange's mother had a miscarriage. That was a very guarded, close secret. And Val Thor said, that happened to you. And Dr. Strange was just blown away with that information. Later, he asked his mother, and the mother confirmed that indeed that information was true. Now, of course, the mind wonders, how did Valiant Thor know that? I mean, how interesting is that, right?
That's very interesting. They followed us closer than we think. Have they been watching us? Can they read our minds? Can they read the Akashic record and reveal the hidden things in the timeline? Yeah, it boggles the mind.
And if you, and this is a personal opinion for the question you just put on the table, I think the answer is an emphatic yes. I think that absolutely that they know us better than we know ourselves, and that they've been monitoring us for I would say tens of thousands of years, and so they certainly know us now, and right up to the minute. According to these reports. So again, we weren't there, and we're borrowing information from other people who say they were there and they were witnesses. So we always have to say that. But a lot of times, this piece of information do get verified by others. So just to keep that in mind. Some other things that were just quite interesting about this is that when, again, he was in the Pentagon in one of the larger suites for 3 years, I find that extremely challenging. 3 years is a very, very long time. And to spend that amount of time at the Pentagon is just blows your mind totally. I mean, but that's what everyone seems to say, that yes, it was 3 years. And they said that he wasn't like cooped up in this VIP suite at the Pentagon, that when he wanted to go someplace, he just disappeared. Some people say they witnessed him actually going through walls, literally going through walls, that they didn't stop him. Wherever he wanted to go, he could go. Wow, that's pretty amazing stuff here.
Yeah, I've heard these stories, and it amazes me again that there are photographs of Valiant Thor. And although a lot of people have speculated that it might be someone else, there's no definitive answer even after all these years, where we have more advanced ways of looking at these photographs. And he's been photographed at gatherings as well.
Absolutely true. He also was invited to attend a UFO gathering in New Jersey, and he accepted. And he and some of his crew went there, and there were photographs of him and the crew sitting there in daylight. I'm sure you've seen those photographs.
Yes, I've seen the photographs.
And they seem to be very happy and content by being there with people who want to investigate ETs.
Balfour falls under my own personal explorations, and today we're not going to have time, but in another show I could talk about that. But also I have a friend who's been researching Balfour for decades and has quite an extensive collection. And Tim Beckley actually gave him the Balfour book that the Global Communications used to publish.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
Fantastic. Wow. I'm sure that Tim had a real fascination with all this going on, for sure. Let me see. There's other things I wanted to just get in here. Let me see. Dina Thor was Val Thor's, shall we say, wife. How interesting is that? That is wrong. There is a Dina Thor, but that's not that's some other thing I'm looking at now that was wrong. Let me take that back. Let me go into a few other pieces of information that I have. Val Thor, the ship that he came on, didn't stay there in Alexandria. It left quite quickly, and it ended up in New Mexico on the shore of a lake. I believe it was Lake Mead. Lake Mead, you can find Lake Mead on a map of New Mexico. And one report said that they were seeing a lot of insects in that area that had died, and no one could explain that. And someone said that they were dying, and you could see these little critters on the ground, and it was right in the time that the invisible ship was at the edge of the lake for a great amount of time, because Thor again was there for 3 years, and that these little insects were crossing into what they called a shield, probably an invisible shield of some sort, and they couldn't handle it, and the little critters died, and that people had noticed these little critters that were there. Nobody could see the ship because, according to the reports, it was cloaked and invisible, and of course that does make sense.
Yes, it does.
Also, there's a short film portraying Balthor, at least one that I know of. I'm looking forward to seeing it. And see, other things about Balthor, well, there's nothing warlike. There's nothing threatening about his presence at all. Not during the time he was in the Air Force Base 3 separate times with Eisenhower, or the times he was in Washington, and some of those times he spent time with not only Eisenhower, but Vice President Nixon. Nixon was also witness to Balthor. How amazing. Now, how they could keep all that secret, it's really beyond me. And it's a little bit offensive, too, that this is huge. This is gigantic, and we being the American public, the taxpayers, hadn't a clue about what was really going down at this time. And this was huge information. It meant that, yes, indeed, not only do we have brothers and sisters on other planets, not only do they know of us and have known of us for many thousands of years, but they observe us currently. And that what we were doing, they felt, was going to be a danger to ourselves. So, again, looking at the big picture, for at least Balthor and the people, the ETs from Venus, they were a friendly, protective group as far as we're concerned. And that's not something to take lightly at all. So. That's a very interesting factor that's what was going on. Now, I'm not for one second saying that all ETs are friendly. I'm not saying that for one second. I personally don't believe that at all. I think that there's very good and very bad and hostile ETs, too. I think the universe is quite populated with all of that. So, other questions that you have that I could take a shot at?
No. I'm familiar with this information. I'm just trying to think for someone listening who's new to it, what can I ask Rita to flesh out? When he worked with Frank Strangis, who was, I believe, a minister as well as whatever else he might have been doing, Strangis recorded a lot of what his experiences were and published them. And in addition to Balfour's appearances, these books, I believe the first one was called Stranger at the Pentagon.
Yes.
And so that helped spread the word. And after Balfour left, I believe that Strangis was in communication with him telepathically because the writings continued.
I would suggest to our listeners tonight that they go to YouTube and look up not only Balthor, but Dr. Strange. And there are some amazing pieces of information and data. One of them is that Strange was working and also exploring some very deep caves in New Mexico area. And apparently he was an authority on the underground caves and tunnels. Now, that's interesting. From another very different source, I learned that you actually could take a submarine around the southern part of the western part of the United States, and you could literally find a way of a tunnel with water. And you could take that submarine and go past Las Vegas underground. what? Water under Las Vegas in the deserts? And the answer is yes. Again, that's a huge secret, and that there are waterways underneath the deserts of California and New Mexico and so forth. I don't have any reports at the moment of how extensive that is, but think of that. That again, we're still learning about so much about our own planet that we're just beginning to explore. Also, the oceans, I believe the figure was maybe at the most 10% of all the oceans we know what's underneath. 10% about. The rest of it is totally unexplored with no data. So think of that. And water, of course, is for most of our planet. So there's a lot of reports of civilizations, ET civilizations, many of them and many different kinds that have been living here, in some reports, longer than man has been here. I mean, that again, it just down the rabbit hole, it blows your mind, but some very knowledgeable people have sworn that that is true. And when I was off the coast of California, what's that island, that wonderful island? I can't think of the name of it now. It's in right off the coast of Southern California. Catalina.
Catalina, okay.
Right, and Catalina, now I went there, it was quite a wonderful boat ride, but when you look at, if you put into, are there any ET craft in the area of Catalina Island or the waters, the answer is yes, there are, and a lot of people living on the coast have reported many times seeing craft, actual craft, coming out of the water and shooting into the sky. Also, another report said that area is incredibly deep. Now, you don't perceive that when you're in a boat like I was, but they said it's a very, very deep area and a perfect area to have secret bases. So just put that on the table as something to keep in mind, the secret bases that might be off the coast. I had a very dear friend in the Air Force. And he was one of the naval, the person who navigates these big planes. And he said, Nick, when we were leaving California and flying towards Hawaii, I saw with my own eyes a huge, he said, Nick, it was gigantic, a circle just under the water. He said, it had to be a craft. There's nothing else natural it could possibly have been. And he said he was astounded at it, and the crew decided to just keep on going and get out of there because they had no idea what it was, but they weren't going to stick around to try to find out. Now, do I trust his word? Absolutely. He was a very dear friend of mine, and he said, Nick, this is absolutely true. I'm an eyewitness to that. Now, so also in that area, there's a lot of other places that seem as though there might be bases. Have we actually found one and discovered one? Well, obviously that's classified information, and us, the citizens, would have a clue if that were true. That would be probably totally buried and covered up. All we can do is speculate because that's all we're allowed to do at this point. Again, that really bothers me that we're not getting real information about what's really happening. That really bothers me a great deal.
And that's why you started the Disclosure Network, to try to get behind some of these stories and find the truth. We're going to be covering in this series all the different things happening on our solar system. So all the things you mentioned, there are shows planned for them. So I'm glad you're up to date on the information. So I'll just invite you back to talk about them. Today, I wanted to focus a little bit on the Venusians, because Val Thor was from Venus. He was not the only Venusian to visit us. Are you familiar with the Orthon?
Tell me more, because at the moment, I'm not sure. Please tell me more.
There was an individual called George Adamski who was born toward the end of the 1800s. He had in the deserts of California an experience with some friends where they saw a saucer land, and they met one of the crew aboard the saucer, and the person was named Orthon, and he was a Venusian. So Orthon would not let them take a picture, but he used his mind to create an image on the photographic plate. And then later on, the contacts increased, and Adamski was able to gather a lot of information. He eventually wrote a few successful books, very successful books that became bestsellers, and he traveled extensively throughout the world, speaking to large audiences, and he got an audience with a Pope as well. So Adamski was able to get his message out, and he gave the same message that Balfour gave about the fact that we were playing with forces that we didn't totally comprehend with nuclear testing, and that we were not only harming ourselves, but we were harming the people in the cosmos beyond our Earth in ways that we couldn't understand. They too said that if we didn't mend our ways, that there were disasters happening in the future. But like many of the what later came to be called Space Brothers, they were very optimistic that we would see the error of our ways and change. So again, looking at the world today, I don't know if their optimism was well placed, but I know that a lot of people, including yourself, are open to change and doing things differently and do want to see a better world. Also, the list goes on, and I don't remember all the Venusians' names. They were difficult to pronounce, some of them, but we had Omnic Onik also. Omnic Onik was a Venusian who was born into a human body. These are called walk-ins these days, where a soul in the body wants to leave, and then other souls can come in. And many times these souls are benevolent souls from other planes or other planets, and they'll take over that life and be able to proceed with their mission. And it is easier to do that than to be born. Like Mark, our friend, Mark Brinkerhoff, he's a walk-in.
Yes, 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 absolutely. In fact, I was just thinking of referencing Mark Brinkerhoff because he has some very, very deep knowledge on this subject, and he is very happy to share that with us. And boy, it's so layered, and there's so much information that could be 10 programs right there, because it's layered and it's incredibly detailed. Mark is a gift, a total gift to us, and it's an honor to know both him and Phyllis Brinkerhoff. They are an amazing, amazing couple, and they are a blessing to us all. Absolutely true. I wanted to go into a couple other just little points that are interesting, and that is, as we know, nuclear waste doesn't go away in 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years. Nuclear waste is with us way, way far into the future. And of course, they build containers to take this nuclear waste, and they, I believe, bury them. I believe that's what they're currently doing. I don't know if it's in the earth or under the seas or both. That I do not know. But am I a little bit frightened about that? Yes, I am, very much so. Because that has earthquakes and other natural disasters can cause those containers to break open, and then what do you do? What do you do with radioactive water islands that float and then come to our shores of America and other countries? I mean, this is a huge nightmare. And this has already been happening. It's not like it hasn't happened yet. It has happened. And I think, as I think you'll agree, Hercules, that the ETs that we're speaking of are very, very protective of our planet's, our planet in general, the welfare of our planet, and not just the people, but the planet itself. Don't you get that?
Yeah, I get that very much so. Their message is very ecological and far thinking. whereas we tend to look at things in the very short term, and a lot of our technology comes at the cost of harm to our planet and all its intelligence, a human, animal, and plant. So we really, really need to look at things in a new way and do things differently.
Another part of that problem is that you can have a nation like the United States agree to the protection of the planet, but there are other mighty nations, Russia, China, other nations are very powerful. They have advanced technologies, and if they're not signing on to protecting our planet, then they're the weak link in the chain. I'm wondering, and I don't have information on this yet, but I wonder if ETs have gone to other heads of other countries and what that was all about. I don't have any data right now. If there is any, it's certainly a few and far between as far as what I've been seeing on the internet. But it just strikes me that they wouldn't go to only America for this exchange of advanced technologies in return for no nuclear testing and get rid of the nuclear bombs and atomic bombs too, I would gather. So again, what is that about? That's a big question, and of course, now our own country is covering up and for sure. So obviously, China and Russia and other major countries, well, you're not going to get any information out of them. Of course, they wouldn't. So here we go again with silence and zero information on something that really affects every man, woman, and child on this entire planet.
The ETs, however, can communicate telepathically. And
yes.
What's been happening since this wave of contacts began again is that more and more people are being contacted telepathically and are channeling ETs. And again,
I would say there's more people. Yeah, there are more people that are outreaching with those techniques. Dr. Stephen Greer is just one example of that. His followers have been getting messages from him of certain months and days and time windows to try to make contact with their mind. And that's an ongoing project that Dr. Greer is doing with his following. And I'm sure there are others also in the religious and spiritual realms. There are other organizations that are doing the same thing, that they are outreaching with their prayers and with their thinking and their outreach, trying to outreach for peace and love, which of course is what they would be about. And I know that's ongoing. I know a couple of people that are in these various groups. So that is, again, that's a whole other subject, and that deserves some real light of day as to what have they been doing, what the methods they've been using, and have they had any significant episodes where they felt as though they were contacted, and if they were, what was the message or messages? I mean, that's a whole area that we need to explore.
We have several shows on that every month because it is, as you say, an area that needs to be explored. The Urantia book is channeled, as are the works of Unarius and the Sixth Revelation. With the Sixth Revelation, we're actually watching this happen before our eyes, you know, where this new information is starting to take form. But it seems like the ETs or the Celestials have never given up on us. And even in our darkest hours, they are channeling like a broken record, John Keel compared it to, the same cosmic message for as long as they've been interacting with us. And again, we're ignoring it at our own peril, especially as we see what's been happening on our planet. Now, the identities, like was Balthor actually from Venus? Was Orthon from Venus? That's the matter of debate too, because the type of ETs that back then were thought to be Venusians are now thought to be Pleiadians. And other, they're called Nordic ETs. So,
right. So, but again, different groups makes a whole lot of sense. Different planets, different gravitational pulls, different oxygen or not oxygen, or what other things they're breathing or not. How they're thinking. Rancher Book talks about beings with two brains. We are one of those groups. Also, three and four brains. Other creatures that don't need oxygen. So when we say no one could live on that planet because there's no oxygen on that planet, well, wake up, guys. You might not need oxygen to still have beings on that planet. So this is a huge subject that needs to be explored. And I only wish that the light of day on all this data would come out, because I think there's a lot more trouble to be had by being totally secret and not telling the public exactly what's going on and what's being considered. I think that's a terrible thing. And whatever committee decided that, I would very much like them to rethink that right now. Because when they say we can't say anything in the name of security, well, a person who has no clue about what is really happening, I would say that's the worst security you can imagine, because they're totally blinded to what's actually taking place. That has all kinds of very, very negative ramifications. So, if we could, we being the governments, not only America, but the other governments, could see their way clearer that this is a much bigger picture. This is a much bigger subject than they used to say, we're just protecting the public because they might not be able to take the fact that we're not alone on the universe. I think right now, wouldn't you say that most people wouldn't blink if that were true, that yes, we are one of many other civilizations in the universes?
Even the Catholic Church has come out and officially said that they're open to the possibility that there's life on other planets. And we've all been watching science fiction movies for at least half a century, no, more than half a century. So I think by this time, most people are open to there being life in outer space. And you have things like Star Trek and Star Wars, too, that became cult classics with the public and became part of our popular culture. So I think we're already conditioned to expect that something is out there.
Oh, I totally agree with what you just said, and I think that the public actually are fans of advanced information. They want to know more. Certainly, we passed the point of we'd be afraid if we had an invasion like in the radio program, you know, the famous radio program War of the Worlds.
Wow.
I think that really is pretty old stuff now. Most people are with all the technologies that we have and the knowledge that we now possess in 2021, they're not going to blink at all if it's announced that yes, indeed, there are many civilizations. Some have numbered it to 150 that we think we know of already, and they are different. Some of them look exactly like us. In fact, there's reports that some of them have been here working among us for many, many years. Do I believe that? I do. I think that's absolutely true. I think that they have been here. There's been ET spotted in California and especially New Mexico. Those seem to be places where there's a lot of activity still to this day. And people have said that they think that they have seen. They said they seemed like regular people, but there was something else going on there, and that there's been reports like that, and these reports haven't necessarily been denied at all. Area 51 and the other areas in that area are very close to Las Vegas. If you go into Las Vegas and go to the airport, there are unmarked planes. And when I asked what those planes were that's so unmarked, those are the ones that where people live or have business in Las Vegas, and they get on those unmarked planes and they fly to Area 51 because they're workers in Area 51. So there's a lot going on there, especially in that area, and others too. So again, it's an exciting time to live, for sure. And I just wish that more truth and wisdom were going to happen very soon, so we can really begin to understand the reality of who we are, where we're from, and who are our neighbors, not just on this planet, but on other planets. We need to know that and acknowledge that. That is something that I hope and pray happens, and soon.
Me too. And before we start wrapping up, I'm going to ask a question. What can we do as sentient beings to get our government and its people to take a second look at this whole nuclear energy initiative that, like I'm thinking what happened in Fukushima most recently, what happened in Chernobyl before then. You know, accidents do happen, and they'll affect us, like you pointed out, not just for a few years or a few centuries, but for millennia and longer. So what can we
how
do?
How about the people who have homes on the coast of California, where the waves from all the way across the Pacific Ocean are starting to deliver some of those nuclear active particles. I mean, what happens then? I don't know if it's happened yet, but I think there's no way to stop it that I know of. So these people then what, have to leave, have to move away from that part of the United States? They can't stay there because that would be a danger to their health. So
Right. This
nightmare is already starting. And I think that our friends, the ETs, that really want to help us are giving us incredibly good advice, and we better take it. Now, to answer your question, there's talking to our neighbors and friends about this, doing letter writing to not only government officials, but also the newspapers, the local newspapers and so forth, the city and state newspapers, write letters to the editor, try to get them to be seen by others. I think that there's a lot of people simply waiting for that to happen. They're waiting for the other guy to do it. Well, we've got to be the other guy. We've got to be the one to say, enough is enough. It's time. It's time for enlightenment. It's time for full knowledge of what is really going down. We don't want to live in a vacuum anymore. Not that we ever did, but we were forced into that. We need to force our way out of that vacuum. We need to know exactly what's going on and the real history of this whole subject. We absolutely need to do that. And I think that pressure from tens of thousands of people will make a difference. Talk about this in your church or synagogue or temple. Talk to your neighbors and friends when you have a club of different clubs you go to. Put this on the list of things, of topics you want to discuss. To my way of thinking, when I brought up these subjects, a lot of times people chime in and say, you know, I'm so glad you brought that up because no one's ever mentioned that before, and I really have some strong feelings on the subject. So you're letting them know that you are interested in what they have to say. And believe me, some of the people and what they're saying is quite progressive, very progressive.
Very progressive.
And enlightening. Yeah. So is there hope? You bet.
And that's a powerful place to start leaving off today's podcast. And again, we have several such groups who are spiritual, some religious, some not. But that they focus on the ETs and their message, and the Urantia book, Unarius, the Sixth Revelation, the Ashtar Command. There are several now who are getting the word out and trying to get us all to live better lives with each other, with the animals and plants, with our planet and with our brothers in space. Nick, you're doing so many awesome things. How can somebody find you and follow all the things that you're doing?
I am not hiding. I am right here, and I would be delighted to take any emails that you may have. If you have a question or comments, I would be delighted to understand what they were. Give me your name and email. If you have a phone number, if you are okay with that, give me that too, because sometimes I will do follow up because I have questions for people who ask me a particular thing, and I need to be more specific with them. So all of that information, and you can reach me again at my email, and I welcome your comments on and your questions. My email address, I'm going to give it twice, N-I-C-K-N-Y-N-Y-1, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one, at gmail.com, N-I-C-K-N-Y-N-Y-1, at gmail.com. There you go.
And since you're the host of four different podcasts on this channel alone, and then you have the Disclosure Network and other venues that also do broadcasting, can you share a little bit about your Urantia Book podcast and your Disclosure Network podcast?
Right. Those are, I'm so proud of all four programs. And the reason I'm so proud of them is the people who have said, Nick, I will be a featured guest on your show that I've asked to be. And these are some outstanding, and I do mean that, outstanding people with a great deal of knowledge. And I've been programming, as you can imagine, for September, October, November, and December for the rest of this year. And I'm telling you right now that the programming I've got for these programs, one, of course, is Disclosure Network New York, which is featuring ET, UFO, discussions of all kinds of knowledge. That is an amazing show. We also have another show, very different, called the Creative Process. And I've already had architects, painters, sculptors, poets, people who design various gizmos, people who take songwriters, there'll be more songwriters also on this program coming up, and some very gifted visionary artists that have said, yes, I'll be on your program. So that, again, that program is called the Creative Process. And it's all about when you're in the state of creativity, what goes through your mind, what do you want to accomplish, and how do you go about that? And some of these answers are absolutely fantastic because people have very different ways of working. Another program is the Urantia book. I've been studying that amazing, loving book for a good 35 years. It is an enlightened masterpiece of love, of understanding of our planet, of the universe, of ourselves, our relationship to God, and a relationship to others. And I highly recommend that. That website is very easy to, it's Urantia, urantiabook.org, urantiabook.org. And that is a beautifully designed website with a treasury of information about the book. In fact, the entire book is online on that. Not only can you read the book, but you can listen to the book. It's been recorded page by page, which was an astounding achievement for the Urantia community. And also, right now we've got 27 world languages that the Urantia book has been translated into. And you can read the Urantia book in any one of those 27 world languages. And there's more to come. They're working on more right now. So,
but unfortunately, here we have to cut off. They're going to cut us off in a minute and have an announcement tonight.
Sure.
Nick,
you're
awesome. Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody who joined in. Right now, we're focusing a lot on Hercules and the Planetary Powers. We also have Hercules and the Space Gods. One deals with within our solar system, the other outside of our solar system. And the return of the Olympian Starseeds initiative is next. Olympian Starseeds are embodied reflections of Olympus's light that have chosen to drink the waters of forgetfulness and enter the dream of mortality to assist in the great realization on Gaia. And that is new and exciting. We haven't done the Olympian Starseed shows in a while, and they will be returning soon. Thanks again to Nick Curto and to everybody that's tuned in. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Nick.
Much love to everybody. Good night.
Good night. And we're going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Aquin.